Welcome to a new deep dive. Today, we're looking at some really core economic ideas, basically how money actually flows through the whole system.
That's right.
You've shared a chapter covering the circular flow of income and this thing called the multiplier process.
Yes, a very powerful process.
And our job really is to pull out the key bits for you. Think of it like this.
Yeah.
How does one single dollar, once it's spent, actually become, well, more than a dollar in terms of economic impact? Let's unpack that.
Exactly. We'll dig into how these concepts really shine a light on national income, you know, the total economic activity, and how even small changes can send ripples right across the economy.
Okay, so starting with the basics, the circular flow, it sounds pretty straightforward.
It is at its heart. Imagine it like the economy's plumbing, or maybe it's bloodstream. Money just moves constantly between two main players, households like you and me, and firms, the businesses.
Right. Households work, firms pay wages.
Exactly. And then households use those wages to buy goods and services from the firms. And round it goes, a continuous loop.
But it's usually more complicated than just households and firms, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. That simple model gets, well, it gets built upon. We add in the government sector and also the external sector trade with other countries.
Oh, okay.
And that's where we talk about injections and withdrawals. Injections are like new money coming into that circular flow. Think business investment, government spending, maybe money from selling exports.
Got it. New money in.
And withdrawals are money leaking out. So savings money not spent, or taxes going to the government, or money spent on imports from other countries, is this balance of money coming in and leaking out that gives us the bigger picture.
So if that's the flow, what happens when there's a sudden burst in injection? That brings us to the multiplier effect, right? This sounds like where things get really interesting.
It is. Yeah, this is key. It shows that an initial bit of spending, say, from an injection doesn't just add that amount to national income. It actually creates a multiplied increase.
Multiplied. How does that work?
Well, think about it. Let's say the government invests $1 billion in, I don't know, building new solar farms. That billion doesn't just sit there.
Right. It pays salaries, buys materials.
Exactly. So workers get paid. What do? They spend some of it, right? On groceries, maybe a new phone, whatever. That spending becomes income for the shopkeeper, the phone company.
Ah, I see. And they spend some of their new income.
Precisely. And so on and so on. Each round of spending is a bit smaller because people save some, or pay taxes, or buy imports, those leakages we mentioned.
Right.
But that initial billion can end up generating maybe 2-3 more billion in total activity as the money circulates. It's a ripple effect, but amplified.
Wow. So $1 really can become many. You mentioned people saving or spending portions.
Mm-hmm.
How do economists track that responsiveness?
Good question. We use concepts called propensities. Sounds technical, maybe, but it's quite logical. Your marginal propensity to consume, or MPC, is just asking, if you get one extra dollar, what fraction of that specific dollar do you spend?
Okay, so if I get an extra dollar and spend 80 cents, my MPC is 0.8.
You got it. And the rest, the 20 cents, might be saved. That's your marginal propensity to save, or maybe goes on taxes or imports. These propensities determine how much fuel stays in the engine for the next round of spending, how much keeps multiplying.
Right, versus how much leaks out.
Okay.
That makes sense. So we have money circulating, multiplying. What's driving the whole thing? What determines the total level of activity?
That's where aggregate demand, or AD, comes in. It's the grand total. It's the total demand for absolutely everything, all goods, all services produced in an economy at a given overall price level.
Aggregate demand.
Oh, yeah.
And what makes up this total demand?
It's mainly four things. First, consumption spending, that's all of us, households buying stuff, hugely important.
Huh.
Second, investment spending by businesses, new machines, buildings, that sort of thing.
Okay. Consumption, investment.
Third, government spending, everything the government buys or spends on, from roads to salaries. And fourth, net exports. That's simply the value of our exports minus the value of our imports.
Exports minus imports. Got it. So C plus I plus G plus XM, basically.
That's the one. Understanding what drives each of those four components is, well, it's pretty central to understanding the whole economy.
And all that adds up to our national income.
Yeah.
When does it kind of settle?
Yeah, the economy finds its equilibrium level of national income when that total aggregate demand we just talked about perfectly equals the total aggregate supply, basically, the total amount the economy can produce, when spending matches production.
But what if it doesn't match perfectly? What if demand is, say, too low?
Ah, well, if the economy isn't operating at its full potential, maybe there's high unemployment, factory sitting idle, we call that a deflationary gap. aggregate demand isn't high enough to buy everything the economy could produce at full employment.
So the economy is underperforming. And the opposite, too much demand.
That's an inflationary gap. Demand is so high, it's trying to push the economy beyond its sustainable full employment capacity. Too much money chasing too few goods, essentially, which tends to drive up prices inflation.
Okay, so deflationary gap means slack. Inflationary gap means overheating.
Pretty much. And knowing which gap, if any, exists is vital for governments and central banks when they're thinking about economic policy. Do they need to boost demand or maybe cool it down?
So putting it all together, understanding this circular flow, the kick of the multiplier, and what makes up aggregate demand really gives you a toolkit, doesn't it? A way to make sense of how the economy works and reacts.
Absolutely. It moves beyond just headlines. It helps you see the mechanics underneath.
It's not just abstract stuff. These are the actual gears working in the real world.
That's right. And if you grasp these mechanisms, it genuinely changes how you might read economic news or think about, say, a government budget announcement. You start to see the potential ripple effects, the multiplied consequences far beyond just the initial number reported. You see the bigger economic story playing out.